Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week. It's another month, I should say. So it's another live show. And tonight we will be talking our favourite music videos. I've been a little bit slack on the promo for this one. And so we seem to have a more intimate turnout than previous ones. I refuse to believe that it's people that just don't like talking to me over Zoom. It can't be that. It must just be the fact that people are busy. But that's not going to stop us from having a delightful chat about music videos. There was no other kind of sort of criteria attached to this. I think it was just a case of like, well, let's just talk about our faves and why they're our faves. And I think there's, you know, instantly, when you think of music videos, there's the big hitters, and I'm intrigued to know where people are going to go with this. If there's going to be something that, you know, isn't, you know, one of the ones that features in the sort of top 50 videos of all time. So I've got a few that have and a few that haven't. So I look forward to chatting. We've got Si joining us tonight, and he's got a plus one tonight. He's got hardcore listed super fan and now part time Off the Beaten Track fan and birthday girl Katie. We've got Steve back, and we've got Danny back. Danny's sporadically turning up at these live shows. It's good to have you back this evening, mate.
Good to be here. Thank you. I have to wake up at like 2 a.m. for my work, so I can't always do something like this if I've got to get up at 2 a.m. So yeah.
Oh, I forgive you, mate. I'll let you off.
And I got a 2.5-year-old son as well, so
that'll do
it. But he's gone to bed now, so I'm all freed
glorious,
up.
Glorious. Right, yeah. Well, I'll kick things off and I'm gonna go for one that seems kind of fitting at the moment. Which I think is a really, really incredible video, incredible cover. And I'm talking about Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor. Obviously, we're recording this, the first live show since the passing of Sinead, who, you know, was a very divisive character. But I think that's kind of what made her so interesting and very remarkable. Never question her voice. Her voice was just ridiculously powerful and beautiful. And I think, you know, it's a sad thing that it feels that when you lose people, you then go back and rediscover their work and then go and do a sort of deep dive on them, because, you know, you can't help but take, you know, a lot of artists for granted, because they're always there, they're always putting out music, and, you know, we've only got so much time in the day. And, you know, I see that there was lots of kind of talk of people saying, you know, within the industry, like other you know, people that have been in and around Sinead's work that were coming out in, you know, and posting stuff, and there was a bit of criticism saying, well, where was you when she needed you the most? And, you know, I guess I can sort of see why some people might feel that. But, you know, everybody does have their own lives and their own things to be getting on with. And I'm sure there was many, many people that reached out to Sinead and tried to help. And unfortunately, she was in a terrible place. And you know, and unfortunately, it came to her passing. So I think, rather than sort of getting bogged down in in the shoulda, coulda, wouldas of other people within the industry, we should just focus on just how incredible her work was and what a outspoken and interesting and brave and, you know, just iconic artist. And I think, you know, being of an age where I kind of heard Mandinka really before the huge hit that was Nothing Compares to You. And so I want to talk about that video. And I'm sure we've all seen it, you know, countless times. And apart from, you know, generally there's a few cutaways where she's walking through what looks like a cemetery or a park and such. It's probably an iconic building that I'm unaware of what it is. But, you know, 90% of that video is just her beautiful face just singing, like, so close to the camera. And, you know, you get to, I think it's about three quarters of the way, and the first tear just kind of just drips from her eye down her cheek. And it's like something so small as one tear just captures just how powerful and moving that record and the delivery of that record is. And to be able to do that on camera as well, and that doesn't look false, that doesn't look like she's turning that on, that is just raw emotion. And I think that's why I wanted to sort of kick things off today and just, you know, just talk about what an incredible video that is. Anybody sort of disagree with me? Does everybody sort of enjoy that video?
I think, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but yeah, I mean, as you said, it is so powerful. It actually overshadowed the rest of anything she did.
Both the song and the video. I think it's a really good point.
It's certainly iconic. I mean, you see Sinead O'Connor, that's the first thing that pops into your head.
Absolutely.
Nothing compares to You, the tear down the face. It's sort of slightly unnerving somehow because it is just so in your face. I don't really want to talk about that because I wasn't a fan. Really, so I don't really want to say that much, but certainly it is what props straight into your mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's basically thinking about someone, and that's why she's crying, because it's all those emotions are thinking about that person as she's singing it. So that's why it's genuine tears. It's incredibly powerful. The most powerful video ever made.
And I think to then also kind of, she didn't write that, you know, and I think that the fact that it wasn't even a big hit, or, you know, there's various kind of versions of Prince doing it. But to be able to sort of take someone else's words and sing them with such conviction and be truly moved by it, I think that's pretty remarkable as well. And I think growing up at an age where, you know, you was privy to seeing, you know, her tear up the picture of the Pope, you know, her you know, standing there and I think, what was the song that she was meant to do a performance and she just sung? Was it War by Dylan, that she just barked, you know, a cappella until I think Kris Kristofferson come out and kind of helped get her away from the, you know, just a huge audience of Americans that was not happy. And was it a Bob Dylan tribute concert? I can't recall, but yeah, I just think also for a woman at that point to be so vocal and so outspoken, I don't think that kind of that audience in America were ready for that, and I think, again, just props to her for just going, wang, and this is what I think, and what you know yous agree with is something that I think needs to be questioned. And yeah, to use that platform at that, you know, his potential career suicide, and I'm sure the stuff with the Pope was, you know, hugely detrimental to her career, and she could have, you know, just played ball and probably sold millions more records. But I think she done what, you know, what she felt was right. And you don't get that many artists that do that, and, you know, are prepared to almost sacrifice their career. You know,
and she used her platform. It was just really the wrong time in history.
Yeah, completely. Now,
15, 20 years later, she would have been a bigger hero for
absolutely.
A lot of people.
Absolutely.
As opposed to a villain, she was completely vilified.
Yeah, Completely, completely. Right, well, look, Steve, while you've got your mic on, what do you want to bring to the table this evening for your favourite music video?
I mean, there's the entire catalogue of the band, it's been mentioned a few times, Madness. The entire catalogue, Complete Madness, the video of the cardboard sleeve taken out. But I don't want to talk about that because they get mentioned quite a lot. You stole my thunder about, and the last one about the video that I'd thought of, when you were talking about the Beastie Boys, because the thing that did turn it around was Sabotage.
Yeah.
And that video, that is an outstanding video. A Spike Jonze joint, not a Spike Lee joint, but a Spike Jonze joint. It's just iconic. And the video and the music that goes with it, that's what kickstarted their career after everything that we were talking about before.
Yeah, massively. And I don't know about you, but like literally all me and my friends wanted to do was just put on fake moustaches and just drive around in our car. It was, and it just reminded you and it reintroduced the world to the Beastie Boys in spectacular fashion. Spike Jonze was on fire at that point. Mm. I think anything he touched turned to gold. And I think when you align yourself with people like the Beastie Boys that want to have fun, you know, want to do something super cool, you can't fail at that. And I think what you get with Sabotage is just, it's on my little list here. I've got five videos and Sabotage is one of them because, you know, when did that come out? 94?
Five.
Yeah. And I mean, you couldn't move on MTV for it. And when you actually hear the song Sabotage, it's a fucking great record, but it's not a commercial pop hit, is it? When you hear it, you'd never go, right, well, there's your big single. And it is. It's a monster of a tune.
No, but when you, I do think that's amazing. Just the first, from the way it starts, you just think, that's a belter.
Yeah.
Why does everyone not like that?
It's a masterpiece. But I think, you know, if I was a label, I probably would have lent on maybe Sure Shot as a more commercial hit. I don't know. But maybe it was a clever way to, I mean, obviously we've got Paul's Boutique and Check Your Head, you know, before that. But was it something they're like, look, this is them playing, you know, pure raucous rock and roll again. And I guess maybe that's what most of our first introduction to the Beastie Boys was with License to Ill. I don't know. I'm just spitballing really as to what it could be. But it's a masterpiece. It's so cool. And yeah, just and it's just super fun. And I don't think there was any, certainly, you know, of my circle of mates, there was no lad that didn't want to be in the Beastie Boys at that point. It was just forever the coolest. To this day, I still think the coolest band that has ever walked the planet. I think it's a masterpiece. Have you seen the documentary on
Apple?
No. Oh.
It's on the list with thousands of other things as well. Oh, you get around to some things and you'll never get around to others.
It's pretty special. It really is. It's super emotional in places as well. Where he obviously, in the, you know, it's being done, you know, after MCA passed and the other two. It's almost like a TED talk. It's really mad, the concept of it. But like you say, you know, they're just cool. Whatever they do, just looks cool. I mean, the video to Intergalactic is amazing. You know, just surrounded by them robots, and they're just like walking through this kind of, I don't know, this kind of sort of sci-fi Godzilla set. It's amazing. And yeah, love it.
See, for me, it's I love 3MCs.
Yeah.
Because it's got such a long intro. I was showing someone, Sam and that, and I was trying to show them because they didn't know the song. And so we were messing about on YouTube and that, and they were like, come on. What? It's like, no, it builds. It takes ages for it to kick in because he's there. He can't get in the building. Yeah. So he has to sort of tailgate behind someone. And they're just there waiting for him to set the decks up.
It's so good. It's so good. And also, what's the performance? Is it check it out, that where they're walking through New York to get to the studio, and they walk into the studio rapping and onto the set. I'm sure it's Check It Out. Oh, it's just fantastic. Yeah, they're, everything they do is just phenomenal. Great shout, Steve. Okay, Danny, what you got?
Yeah, I've I've been having a think. Well, first of all, I'll just talk about a story. My identical girl, because yet last night, I did a best man speech for my identical twins' brother's wedding. Because yeah, he got married yesterday to the lovely Katie. So it's quite an emotional day, and yeah, I was tasked with the best man speech. So hopefully, I tried to do some I definitely embarrassed him, that's for sure. Because we're identical twins, so we kind of like know where the line is. And a lot of people are like, "Oh my god, you can't say that." Well, I've just said it. You know, funny things to what he's done, you know, with the girls, or whatever. But you know, people, so I got some funny. Yeah, it was a bit of a, but I, you know, it was a really good fun. And one of the stories I mentioned in the best man speech was me and Matt in 2000 and a couple of mates went to a gig at the Exeter Cavern Club. Have you ever been to the Cavern Club in Exeter?
I've played it.
Oh, you played it. Fantastic. Good for you. That's great. Yeah, we, me and Matt, we're both drummers. We played there as well in bands, and we've seen lots of bands perform there. Fantastic vibey venue, as you well know, a bit like the Liverpool Cavern with the brick walls and the archways and that underneath in the lower ground underground club. It's a wicked place. And if you ever go to Exeter, you should check out the Cavern. And we went to see this band, and it was just before they released their second single, and that second single was called Yellow, and the band was called Coldplay. And it was an absolute belting performance. And you know, knew those four guys on stage. They had some incredible chemistry. And the sound they were making, obviously, we hadn't heard the music before. We had maybe heard Shiver before, but this was the second single just about to be released called Yellow. And yeah, the songs were just like, this sounds amazing. And then his banter on stage was just like, wow, he's got charisma, Chris Martin. You said, and he was mentioning about, they did a video for Yellow, and they went to Studland Beach in Dorset, and the plans got slightly changed because of the weather. So they had to basically make it really stripped down, simple. And in the end, it was just him walking towards the camera, and they filmed it at 50 frames a second. So he's basically singing fast to the track, which is 50 frames per second. When it goes into the edit, it goes to the normal rate of 25 frames a second, and then the track's overlaid at the correct speed. So basically, it makes him look like he's walking in slow-mo, because it's it was filmed at 50 frames a second, and when he was singing, it was double time. So but that's why it looks like he's walking slow-mo. But it's you know, it's a great video, and you can see in his eyes, I watched it today, he's like, he's got that real energy and passion for it, and wide-eyed, you know. We've just a raw talent, and he's from my neck of the woods. I'm from Devon, and he's from Whitstone in near Exeter. And we went to that gig, and we picked up on the way some guy and his sister who was waiting at the bus stop, and they were going to the gig as well. And we gave him a lift to the gig, and actually his cousin was Chris Martin, so he's going, "Oh, I'm going to see my cousin's band."
Wow.
And he spoke to him at the end. And then my brother actually, so brazen, he went on stage afterwards as they were de-rigging and had a play on Will's drum kit.
Fantastic.
And Will Champion gave him a signed pair of sticks. And it said, "Dear Matt, don't break this pair." And then Matt broke him in a band practice. but yeah, it was an absolutely incredible gig. And yeah, I just like that video because it's kind of simple. It's just the raw emotion of it. It's not like a really, you know, bells and whistles video. It was just their second single, and it was, you know, stripped down and just emotion, which is, again, going back to the Sinead O'Connor thing, where it's like you're just looking at their face and reading their emotions.
And it worked because, yeah. I mean, aside from it being a you know, a fantastic indie pop single, it, you know, that video took them, I think it might have been the third single. I think they put that Blue Room EP out first with Bigger
Very
Fuss.
Very good knowledge, yeah. Yeah. From Brothers and Sisters EP?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
But then this was like the second single off the debut album.
That's right, that's
Parachutes.
Right. And obviously Yellow become the huge global hit that, you know, took them into you know, I guess Stratosphere. U2 territory.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're a divisive band. I think, you know, people love or hate Coldplay. And I was lucky to not see them as early as you. I did see them at the end of the Parachutes tour. And I see them another further two times on the next two records. And seeing them, I guess, become, every time I see them, it was all of a sudden it was in an arena and then it was in a stadium. And it was like, and I probably did dial out after the third record, but I did watch that Head Full of Dreams documentary on Amazon Prime, I think it's on there for free. And I thought it was absolutely incredible. I thought it was really, really smart that the belief in what they were doing, the fact that they were documenting it from sitting around at uni to that first gig at the Dublin Castle or the Camden Falcon, wherever it was, and to then walking off and just going, oh, this time next year we're going to be playing Glastonbury.
Yeah, the self-belief. Incredible.
And then walk off the stage that night and say, this time next year we're going to headline.
Yeah.
And they fucking did. And
they actually have, I don't know if you've ever listened to that interview with Joe Wiley fairly recently, and he basically has a plan, and he knows the next album, and he knows the next album after that. He's always planning, and you know, he is quite an ambitious guy, but between the four of them, they're just such a good force. And you know, he always looks at Johnny during the performances because they got this incredible bond, you know, and they're just like, you know, without each other they're nothing, you know, they're just a proper amazing team.
Five, isn't it? It's not four. The manager is the fifth manager. Member.
Right,
it's
gotcha.
A five-way split.
Oh, okay, five-way split, yeah. And that's why these are the bands that have longevity.
Yeah.
Five-way split, you know, and you two as well, of course.
Yeah,
because they split it, and there's no arguments about money. Yeah.
And I think that has been it, because, it, you know, that documentary shows the issues that they had with Will, and then issues with, you know, with drinking other members and stuff, and I just thought it was a fantastic documentary. Whether you're a fan of Coldplay or not, I thought it was a really amazing insight into, you know, your local indie band becoming arguably the biggest band in the world. And it's, you know, and seeing the issues and the struggles that come with that, and the pressure to, you know, you release Parachutes or Rush of Blood, and it's like, everybody's looking at you going, right, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
And I guess you could say the same for the Lewis Capaldi documentary on Netflix. I'm not a Lewis Capaldi music fan. I find him great. I think he's really, really interesting, and I love the fact that he doesn't take himself very seriously. Yeah. But
he's got Tourette's as well, hasn't he? So
he has.
He's very honest about that, and I think that's really endearing as well when he's so honest.
Absolutely.
And
you know, and the fact that, you know, he documents that in this documentary, you know, shows the vulnerability. And but even as much as he makes light of everything, you see what the pressure took, the toll that it took on him in that documentary to have to follow up with a new album. And
it's like, all on him as well. It's not a band as such.
Absolutely.
It's just he's on his shoulders. It must be huge pressure to follow up with the same success.
The expectation.
Average.
Well, on that, with that documentary, the only time, because you can see the Tourette's building and the ticks and that building, and about the only time he didn't have them, so the second half of that documentary, is when he's with his mates in the pub.
Yeah.
And he's just Lewis with his mates.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a fantastic.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Oh, I mean, I love a music doc anyway, and I watch them about anyone, but I thought that was an absolute cracker. Mm. Well, what you got for us, si? You want? Now, I'll tell you what, birthday girl can go next. What you got, Katie?
Well, in complete contrast, because you lot have all been nice and serious, I like an entertaining music video. And I think my first choice would probably be Frank Turner, Little Changes.
Fantastic.
Because he just, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but I love a dance routine as well. And he's trying to do a dance routine and he cannot do a dance routine. And it's just, it's wonderful because you really kind of feel for him because you can see him at one point just going, oh my God, as everyone else is dancing away. And he's just like, what am I doing? I like that whole video because it was a bit of a cheesier record of his anyway. Yeah. And I am a bit partial to a bit of cheese.
You're a bit partial to Frank Turner, right? Because as much as I mock you for being a Steps fan, aside from that, as obsessed you are with Steps, you are a huge Frank Turner fan, aren't you?
Yeah, just a little one. Yeah. I'm seeing him next Sunday, and that'll be gig number 49.
So, I mean, that's conviction, isn't it? Was you at the Frank Turner gig that Pip supported?
No, I missed it and I'm gutted. It was one I really wanted to go to because the flat I was living at looked at Wembley Stadium. And so I knew they were playing there and then, and I didn't get to go. I was gutted. Yeah, I really wanted to.
Who else was on that bill? Was it Billy Bragg as well?
Billy Bragg, Beans on Toast, Pip, and then, yeah, Frank.
Fucking hell, that's been a great night there, isn't it?
I know, so annoyed. So thanks for bringing that up. I'm really,
sorry,
really
mate.
Glad.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I heard a track the other day that I'd never heard before, and I ended up ringing my mate Nick up and going, "Have you heard this?" And because we was talking about our kids and music and how you end up finding certain bands at a certain age and it all just resonates and you realise that, you know, for me it was the Smiths and REM and you know, I'm sure generations before me was the same, and generations after me, you know, I'm sure bands like the Smiths still resonate, but everybody has got their own, you know, version of that. And I'd never heard, and he was one of my favorite guests, was the singer from the Lottery Winners on my podcast. He was just such a crack and he was so nice, and I love the fact that they're completely DIY, they do it all themselves, and they've had a number one record. That track with Frank on it, that diary, is it Diary to Myself? Letter to Myself, fucking hell. Like,
it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's so good. Have any of you heard that?
I saw them live with Pet Needs supporting a couple of months back.
It's so good. He's just, you know, I guess writing a letter to himself about growing up. And it's fantastic. Yeah, it's a real, real catchy little sort of, like, the chorus is, I mean, the verse is just, Lottery Winners just kind of spitting out like this kind of diary entry, really, about, you know, just telling himself that everything's essentially going to be all right. And then Frank's just got this really great melodic chorus that just soars, and then it just drops back into this dialogue. It's a cracker. When you get a chance, I'll post it on the Patreon afterwards. It's a real belter of a single. And I'll tell you what, because I was a little bit like not really on the money with Frank Turner. I've seen Million Dead a few times, like back in the day, and my mate's band.
It was quite a departure. Million Dead was so heavy.
Such a departure.
Such a departure. Yeah, from and, that, it was so heavy, wasn't it? Four of them, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just so thrashy.
Yeah, massively.
Not exactly easy listening, but
no, and I guess
quite angsty. Yeah.
Massive. It was fucking a proper hit. And
thanks for reminding me, because I was trying to remember the name of that band and then you said it, Million Dead.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have remembered.
Fantastic.
The name. Yeah.
And it was only the fact that my mate's band went on tour with them that I sort of discovered them, and then they were like, oh yeah, like Frank's got this thing that he does on his own, and I was like, wow, that's pretty crazy. And he'd been on Pip's podcast, and Pip had always sort of said, like, this, he's such a nice dude. And when I got him on here, I had him on here quite early on, and he was so nice, and he was just like so chatty, and his story was brilliant. And he told a story that he said that he grew up listening to lots of records that he's, hopefully I remember this right, his sister used to sort of have on in the house. If he hasn't got a sister, Kate, do tell me.
Yeah.
And he said his sister must have been probably around my age, I'm gathering, probably not offended about it. And he said, like, you know, she'd be listening to, I think it was like the Levellers and Counting Crows and lots of things that I think you can hear in his music. And then I see that he covered Julie by the Levellers and does a fucking fantastic cover of that. It's one of my favourite songs by him. He covers fantastic. And Billy Bragg, I think, covers something on that EP. I think he does Hope Street on that EP as well. But he recounts his story. He said he was playing in Baltimore, and there's a track on the first Counting Crows record called Raining in Baltimore. And he said, like, right, I'm in Baltimore, and my sister used to play me this record, I'm going to cover Raining in Baltimore. And he said, and I played it, and it was raining in Baltimore, and I played it. And then I got a tweet afterwards from Adam Duritz, the singer from Counting Crows, saying he was in the crowd, and he thought it was wonderful. Now when you think, holy shit, that's when the stars align. Like, I love little sort of stories like that. And yeah, he was an absolute delight. And then from then, he then went and guested on my mate's mental health podcast. And he just seems like a really kind guy, and that's just got this. I mean, your testament to it, Kate, like, you know, following of absolutely obsessive nut jobs, and like that, just, you know, that just follow him everywhere, and that ain't an easy thing to do. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's testament to having that connection with your fans, and I think that's.
I'll just say also on the Frank Turner, because one thing, did for Kate's birthday, he recorded a birthday video for her. Unlike a lot of music stars, especially someone, because he's big. Okay, he might be slightly under the radar with the popular stuff, but he is big. He didn't ask for any money for it. He just asked a few quid to the charity that he supports.
Love it.
And he did it within about 48 hours.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it's just, yeah.
That's what you want from
your
pop star,
isn't it? He's just a nice bloke.
Yeah. Oh, I love to hear things like that. Well, look, what you got for us, Si?
Well, as I was telling Katie, I never really watched MTV now. Music videos weren't a huge part of me growing up, but the first one I remembered straight away was Opposites Attract by Paula Abdul.
I didn't even think of that. But I guess it was like, I guess if you're a kid, that's like the most exciting thing ever, right?
It was, I'm guessing, I don't know. I haven't looked it up. I think it's probably late 80s, early 90s probably. About the same time as maybe Roger Rabbit, and you had that live video and animation overlaid, and it was brilliant. And it's just, yeah, it's always stuck in my mind, that one.
Yeah, I always thought that's quite questionable. It was called MC Scat Cat. That always kind of felt a little weird. But
that's my childhood ruined.
but yeah, I mean, she was an absolute pop star at that point, wasn't she?
I mean, there is that side of it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And am I right in saying, I think she married to Emilio Estevez, I think, then. I think, I'm sure she married Emilio Estevez, you know, at the end of the 80s. And I think he would have been riding high with Young Guns. And she was the pop princess. But I mean, I've got a level with you. And I don't generally call out people's choices. And I hate that record, so I really do hate that Boxy record. I really like Straight Up. I think Straight Up is an absolute gem.
That's the only one I know, Straight Up. I can't think of any other songs she's done.
She done Rush.
Well, I've been ragging on the Smiths on virtually every one of these episodes, so you finally got me back.
I think she was a judge on a TV talent show as well. That's all I know about her.
For herself, yeah. Matt.
I've discovered more videos through, like, you know, the last few years, like YouTube and stuff like that, just catching up on stuff. But yeah, that's the one I remember from back in the day.
Absolutely.
I don't remember many.
I've got a shout out on the Roger Rabbit front. My local theatre that's long been shut down, and it was actually used in the Deeper Underground by Jamiroquai video when he's jumping on all the seats.
But another one of your favourites.
That's another one of my favourites that I do struggle with. But that was filmed in the State Theatre where I grew up, as was the cinema scene in Who Framed Roger Rabbit when he's sitting there in that was. In the derelict theatre down the road from me. Okay, right.
Where was that in Grays?
Thurrock,
Thurrock, right, okay.
Right, it's called the State Theatre. It was a huge, huge, beautiful building, and it's there, and it's rotting, and it's a real shame. But okay, right. I'm going to throw a few videos in. I want to throw one in that I don't necessarily think was groundbreaking in any way. But it's a video to Papa Don't Preach by Madonna. Two reasons. First reason, Abu pops out in it, and it went absolutely mad all over the news. And me and all my mates would literally just sit there with our finger on the pause button where she's got this sort of basque on and she's sort of marching around this room and she sort of flicks her head back and one boob just pops out. And it was like, quick, pause it! And it was like, look at that, it's Madonna's boob! And like... And so that was, like, you know, absolute kind of ridiculous, fueled up teams just, you know, getting to see the absolute, you know, queen of pop's boob. It was such a big thing at the moment, not the boob, but that was ample. And it's probably one of my favourite Madonna songs, and it's my favourite era of Madonna insofar as the short cropped blonde hair. And I was just absolutely in love with Madonna, and I love that song. I like the storyboarding of it, and that video, I just could not stop watching it. Boob aside as well, I just thought it was an absolute cracker. So I'm going to throw in a little pop gem in that one. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, how was I to know that, you know, 3 or 4 years later she was going to be doing all sorts of ridiculously naughty stuff that would, you know, that I guess by then maybe I'd moved on, but at that point she was just the coolest thing ever, and I still love that video. I think it's a cracker for no other reason than I just think it screamed at the teenage lad that I was, and I loved it. We should also, I guess, if we're talking pop stars of the 80s, I mean, it's got to be impossible not to mention Take On Me, right, by A-ha. I mean, that's an absolute...
Yeah, message. great video, isn't it? Yeah, a real classic video. That's such an amazing song. Covered by A1, but let's forget about that. But yeah, the original is incredible. And you know, and I think you've interviewed them at some point, haven't you?
I had Mags on, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. And they just really nice, seem like decent guys. And I like some of their later stuff as well. You know, I've listened to a few tracks here and there. They've got quite a nice vibe to them, and you can kind of imagine the landscape of where they're from with some of their songs as well.
The last album was Soundscapes, and it was absolutely beautiful.
I'll have to check that out.
But if you're a fan of Coldplay, Max, who I interviewed, he's in a band with Guy and Johnny or Will, two of Coldplay's in a band with Mags and somebody else, and that they released music, and I can't remember the name of what they released music under.
Yeah.
But yeah, they work together. And
Johnny and Will of Coldplay.
Definitely Guy.
Oh, Guy. Yeah.
I'm not sure who else. It's another member, Johnny or Guy. I'm not sure. Have a little look. But
Mags is he? What does he do in A-ha?
He plays keys.
Oh, he's so keys, right.
When I asked who was what was the greatest ever intro, I could tell, and he went, well, I mean, I've got to mention Take On Me, right? And I was like, damn right you have. I thought, Christ, I had the guitarist from The Killers on, and he didn't say Mr. Brightside. I was like, how can you not shout about your finest intro you've ever written? And but if you listen to Take On Me,
yeah,
if we're talking intros, you don't get a vocal for, I think it's well over a minute. You've just got like a, you've got quite a long intro before you get the you know, the money shot of the keyboard play over. You know, you just get the sort of build. But when it drops, I mean, it's perfection.
It's an amazing song, an amazing video as well. It's such an incredible video.
And I think
going from the black and white to the colour and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. And the you know, just getting into an animated world. It was
quite groundbreaking, wasn't it?
Massively. And yeah, absolute cracker. And I think, and also, you know, I mentioned how beautiful Madonna was. I think if you're going to be a pop star and you look like Morton Harkett, you've got a foot in the door, because what a ridiculously beautiful man.
Yeah, he looks perpetually young, doesn't he? But he's probably about 80 at the moment, but he looks about 50.
Like, absolutely. And you know, I kind of get a bit annoyed when you see people that look like that, then open their mouth and they can literally sing falsetto the way that he does. It's,
singing in English as well.
Yeah,
are they Swedish?
They're Norwegian.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks. I was stabbing in the dark. I knew I was going to embarrass myself.
From Smash Hits on my wall of Morton Harkett. But next to me, aeroplanes and macaws was Morton Harkett.
Well, I definitely may be on my wall, so I could always spell definitely after that. The Oasis album cover.
God, I Samantha Fox. On a big Woolworths poster that my dad got me for about my 12th birthday. I don't know what that says. That's worrying. I'm sure I'll unpack that in therapy one day. It was quite an interesting story. When I had Mags on, he said that they basically packed their bags. He was, I think, from what I gather, Morton Harkett wanted to be like, he wanted to be like Ray.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, Eddie didn't, you know, he wanted to be like, I think he was sort of shying away from the sort of pop sensibilities. But they moved to London to try and make it happen. I think it was Mags and Powell first, and then I think Morton then came over. And because if you listen, the first version they recorded of Take On Me under a different producer is way different. And it's really interesting when you hear these songs that you're so familiar with and you just hear before it got reworked, like the first. And we mentioned Madonna, but I think there might be the same with Like a Virgin. I might be wrong. But there's like the first edit of it before, and that didn't. West End Girls is a prime example by the Pet Shop Boys.
Like the demo version.
Like, no, it was released.
Okay.
And it didn't work. And then they've put it in with another producer. And it just, all of a sudden, you know, they just rework it and it absolutely pops. And it was very much the case for Take On Me and West End Girls, if we're talking kind of, you know, mid-80s synth pop. And what a video. And I think it still really holds up now. I think when you sort of watch that, I think it's still an absolute cracker. Steve, have you got another one that you want to throw in there?
I've got another few. I can keep going for a bit.
Let's do it.
It's a pervy end from the childhood as well. When I had the Madness video, my big sister had the Duran Duran video.
Yep.
Girls on Film. Oh. Certainly had a few bits in there that stuck in the memories.
That was the stuff of dreams, that was.
But the other video that I was going to mention was another big one, Smack My Bitch Up, The Prodigy.
Absolutely.
It's such a sort of good. It's like, half of it was like a great night out, half of it was like a shite night out.
Yeah.
Going fighting and sort of stuff like that. But the way it sort of builds, the way it goes, first person thing was just top notch.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great shout. And you know, and you don't see it that often. I think it got barred, right? I'm sure it got barred, didn't it? I mean,
controversial name, controversial song, controversial video, everything about it.
But that's what you want from your rock and rollers, right? If you know that the Prodigy aren't going to sing about, you know, standing on the doorstep kissing your girlfriend, they wanted to sort of fuck with things, I guess. And don't get me wrong, you know, the type of song that, you know, I guess doesn't sit right with a lot of people, understandably so. But sonically, that record, you know, if you're going to make a video for that, it's got to be something that hits as hard as, no pun intended, that hits as hard as the you know, the music. And I think at that point, they were just on top of the world, weren't they? They were driving music forward, I think.
I mean, I didn't like the early Prodigy, Charlie and all that, and even going into Poison and stuff, I didn't like that. But Fat of the Land, I thought it was great.
Fat of the Land, that was the third album. That was when they really exploded with Firestarter and Smack My Bitch Up.
Mm. For me, I liked the fact...
Breathe as well, that was a big song. Breathe, was it?
Breathe, yeah. And for me, like, I remember hearing, like being old, like hearing like Charlie and Wind It Up and Out of Space was one of the first songs that indie clubs were playing. And it was full on hardcore. It was just, you know, it was hardcore. And it was being played in indie clubs because it had that sort of, that break in it, you know, for the chorus. All of a sudden, like, and it kind of just pointed the way, really, that all of a sudden, rock and indie clubs were playing this record by the band of Prodigy. And I was like, I mean, I loved it. And I was DJing it and playing it in my clubs. And then it just, like you say, slowly got harder with Voodoo People and No Good Start to Dance. And for me, I still think to this day, I know you're not a huge fan. I think Poison's like my favourite Prodigy song.
Poison's the best out of that sort of bunch of things before Fat of the Land. And I like it more now as after I filmed Ecstasy. That is actually quite good.
That great nightclub choices as well, playing Poison, that would... People would just go nuts for that, wouldn't they?
The live drums.
When we were...
Yeah, the live drums. They had a live drummer, didn't they? Kieran or something. Kieran Pepper. Yeah,
yeah, so I used to tour about in a band with Kier.
Oh, wicked.
So Kier was in a band called Real TV, and before that, he was in a band called Garp. And they used to come and play at my club. And Kier's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And at this point, interesting, might not be an interesting story, but my band... At the time, we was in this sort of comedy band, and we won this Battle of the Bands in Chelmsford, which is where Kier was from, actually. And on the final of the evening, Liam and Maxine were in the crowd. We didn't know, and then about 2 days later, we'd won this award thing and had kind of made a bit of a racket because of what the sort of nature of what we'd done. My guitarist got a call saying, will you come down and audition for the Prodigy?
Wow.
And this was the band that was managed by Gervais. So Gervais was going, well, what do you want to do? And he's like, oh, I don't know, because we just won this. I mean, in hindsight, we just won a Battle of the Bands in a fucking pub. I mean, it's a big pub, but it was still a pub.
You were managed by who? Ricky Gervais?
Yeah.
And, you were managed by Ricky Gervais?
Yeah. I mean, this is like 1997. So no one knew who Ricky was then. There was no benefits to it then.
Was that before he managed Suede?
It was around the same time, maybe just after. Like,
what did you play in the band?
I was a singer.
Oh wow!
I'd say singing's a bit of a stretch of the truth. Shouted a lot. Like,
you got confidence, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
And passion for it, and knowledge of music.
I think I just wanted some attention.
Well, managed by Ricky Gervais. Obviously, you've done loads of gigs and supported all sorts.
Yeah,
we've done that. Got the T-shirt.
You have the wardrobe for it.
I did have the wardrobe for it. But yeah, well, I don't really talk about that band too much. There's some very questionable material out there. And so basically, my guitarist got this message just saying, like, would you be interested in coming to audition because we're now going to put together a live band, and they've just got Keir in the band, and they wanted a guitarist, and my guitarist was like, oh, I don't really know, like, you know, I don't want to not do this band. I was like, you can't not go and audition for the Prodigy. That's fucking amazing. And he went and auditioned. He got offered the gig, and he chose not to do it. And then
what? He chose not to do the Prodigy.
And about 7 months later, I was standing in a field at V97 with him, or V98, watching Giz Buck then playing guitar for him, and then literally just tearing the roof off with this homecoming show at V when Fat of the Land dropped. And I was like, yeah, he might have made a bit of a dumb move there, mate. He was just like, fuck's sake.
Maybe it wasn't meant to be, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably, you know. Look back now, I think, fuck's sake, should have gone with that. But yeah, that
you got to go with your gut, like instinct, you know, intuition. Yeah. And if his intuition wasn't there, then
yeah, he should be questioning that gut feeling now, though. shocker of a decision. But yeah, fantastic pick there, Steve. Right, okay, let's have another one from the birthday girl.
I think the first video I remember watching, and it ended up being the first single I ever bought as well, was Wannabe Spice Girls.
I mean, I'm not a Spice Girls fan, but the impact that had, and certainly that beginning of that record, you know, just seeing them all run up to that camera and then start running, moving backwards as it starts. I guess, in a weird way, it's as iconic, if not more iconic, than the Prodigy and Oasis and all the other things that were happening at that point, you know, because I guess it went global, didn't it? You know, and then other bands didn't. And the impact that had. And is it Mel B at the beginning in the kind of the green? Laugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's such a, you know, huge single. And your first single has, you know, hits that level of success. Like it's
it was incredible. It was just everywhere. It was just iconic, I think, for my age group anyway.
Yeah, massively. And do you know what? Like I was really lucky in lockdown. I had Melanie C on, who was absolutely delightful. Like she was so nice and a right laugh. And it is interesting because I guess, you know, you have these sort of premeditated thoughts that, like, oh, I bet she just grew up listening to Madonna and a load of shit music. Like, and she was just obsessed with Kate Bush and was just talking, you know, we were just talking for ages about, you know, how incredible Kate Bush is and the music that she was exposed to as a kid. And it was just like, you forget, like, you know, I guess when you get put in these manufactured bands, you're kind of, you know, curated and crafted to kind of deliver this thing, this product. But you forget that, you know, I suppose these people have all grown up in working class families like us and have been exposed to these, you know, and bought their first records and listened to the charts and found what they're into. And it's, you know, and I guess all you see is the stuff that the label projects and you just go, well, that's what they are. And certainly doing this podcast, you know, and speaking to artists that I didn't think I could have any sort of good music chat with. It might just be a bit like superficial, and it always catches me out. And
when you know, you're getting steps on, then
I don't know. Do you know what's weird is, like, you know, I do get offered all sorts of pop bits and bobs, but I've never once had anyone from Steps's firm reach out. You know, I got when I had Bewitched on, it was like, I just thought, I'm not a Bewitched fan. Of course I'm not. But I'm fascinated by, you know, people's lives when you become an overnight. I think Bewitched had, I think we spoke about this on the Hardcore, on an episode of Hardcore Scene coming soon, because Chris went and saw Bewitched at Margate Pride, I believe. But yeah, just, you know, I think they've had like, they were one of the first girl bands to have like something like five number ones on the spin or something like that. And to go from nothing to that, that's a journey that very few people are ever going to get to be part of. And, you know, the impact of that and what that must do to your world and the, you know, the world of your nearest and dearest. And all of a sudden you can't, you know, live a normal life. You're on this, you know, non-stop roller coaster, no pun intended, they're roller coaster of PR and madness. It must be absolutely phenomenal. And like, yeah, you know, both good and bad. So I love having a little chat with people like to kind of get an insight into what that must be like. And
yeah, because we saw Bewitched and Mel C at Brighton Pride as well before Steps Run. They were all really brilliant. Yeah, Bewitched were really good. I didn't really know what to expect from them, but yeah, they were just fun. They were great.
Yeah. Mel C is one hell of a singer.
Yeah, she absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, she looks incredible as well. Like, she's fantastic. She was, an absolute cracker of a guest. Danny, give us another video, mate.
I haven't really prepared another one, actually.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe Park Life, that kind of kicked off all the indie Britpop years. It was such a lively Cockney video and really visual, and they're all like, you know, doing little dances and, you know, yeah, bopping around, yeah. And it was like, yeah, it's great vibe on that video. And I love all the characters like Phil Daniels and stuff.
Yeah.
And the lyrics are so clear on that song, you know, just a really epic lyrics from Phil Daniels there. Yeah,
it was a work of genius to pull him in.
Like, yeah.
Because that was such a nod to, I guess maybe they couldn't afford him on Modern Life is Rubbish because he would have probably sat better on that. And I should also say that I did notice, and I watched it last week, Quadrophenia has been added to the BBC iPlayer, so you can go and watch it
for
the moment. So I went and gave that a little watch.
If you go on Sky, certainly Sky Arts, there's about three or four documentaries, and there's the one where it's the reunion of all the cast.
Mm.
And they read through some of the original scripts all together in front of this live audience, and great, they discuss it, and it's about an hour and a half. It's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And that film just really holds up. I think if we're going to talk Blur as well, you know, I think the Damien Hirst produced Country Ass, you know, was a very colourful and I guess almost like a sort of follow-up to Park Life in that kind of Cockney geezer kind of parody that they came up to. But I think we should also nudge Coffee and TV, which is a you know, incredible little bit of animation.
Oh, that's a great shout. Coffee and TV, what an amazing video that one with the milk carton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that video. And Graham Coxon does lead vocals on that song.
That's right.
A cracking video. Very memorable video, that one. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The little story that goes alongside the song. Yeah.
And also, I guess, you know, Damon Albarn has really just grasped the concept of the visual now, because, you know, for the last 20 years, he's had 10 times more success globally with Gorillaz than he has with anything that Blur's ever done.
We've literally just said that to each other.
Yeah.
When as soon as you said Damon Albarn, that we're like, Gorillaz, how can you not have that in the videos?
Of course. What an amazing idea.
The video for Dare is quite good. I think is it Sean Ryder in that one?
Yeah.
Which was meant to be. Because I think they told him to say you got to say it's not there, but he didn't say it. He just said it's there. It's there, but he said it's there. So that stuck.
Yeah.
Dare,
I mean, if you're going to get Sean Ryder in a studio, I guess you've got to kind of expect that kind of.
Well, lottery winners did.
They did, yeah. He
chatted about Tommy Rylance when I saw them. He chatted about, because he did also, they sang the one they had Boy George in as well.
That's right.
They were talking about Sean Ryder and getting him in. They were really nervous, and he was obviously Sean Ryder. But as soon as he got in that studio, he just smashed it.
Yeah. Oh, I wish he'd done that when he came to DJ My Place.
I love that story.
What a fucking catastrophe was that night. Jesus Christ. But Sean Ryder, get Sean Ryder. He's definitely for real. You don't just turn it on for the cameras. He was a fucking nightmare that night. Anyway, lastly, it's back to you, who's your second one, Si, right?
Yeah, I'm going cheese as well, but back to my rock roots. It's November Rain.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Someone had to throw that in, didn't they?
Great shout.
Oh, it is pure rock, Guns N' Roses, cheese at their absolute destructive best.
Yeah.
Weeks late, and then they just walk off. And I think it was you that said it still on one of, was it on one of these where that is actually them walking off as well, having had an absolute fit together.
So I've got like six episodes that have never come out that I recorded with Josh Weller, this little podcast, and we interviewed people that were very successful in the 90s when there was money in the industry and to what it was like, and then they're still working now and asking them, and we spoke to, like, who did we speak to? David Arnold, the producer and musician, and one of them was, oh God, I can't remember his name, but he was the guy that produced all the Bon Jovi videos. He produced like literally all of Bross's videos, all of E17's videos. But he was the kind of go-to rock guy, Aerosmith. And I was just thinking, has he done that video? Because if you're talking about 90s, the most ridiculous pomp over the top, everything turned up to 11 nonsense is November Rain. And he directed November Rain. So I was like, right, I've got a lot of questions here. And I'm not a Guns N' Roses fan at all. And I happen to live in a house with a huge Guns N' Roses fan. And it was literally about a month ago that everybody I know went to watch Guns N' Roses. And I was like, I don't really want to go. So I swerved it. I did watch a bit of their stuff on Glastonbury. So the November Rain video, he said that they did all turn up 2 weeks late. And that's on location. It's like, not 2 hours, two fucking weeks. Which is just ridiculous. It just shows the level of dickheads they must have been at that point. And the church they use is on wheels and it's floated around sets. It's the church they used in Young Guns. And they used it for the scene in that video.
They can literally decide where to put a church.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then obviously I said, so you directed / in the middle of the desert with a guitar not plugged in, just literally having a great big musical wank in front of everyone. And he was like, yep. So we got to chat about that. And he did also...
Great big musical wank could just be the title of their biography, couldn't it?
But he said that the bit when Slash gives the ring, I think it's Slash, or is it, or Duff, or whoever it is, gives the ring to Axl, and then walks out, he walked out and fucked off. And he said, like, they hated each other at this point. He said it was, like, an impossible environment to work with, but to work in. And he said that the whole concept, surprise, surprise, for this massive epic thing all about Axl was Axl's idea. And apparently this was at the time when there was MTV premieres on MTV, where they'd say, like, you know, at 10 o'clock tonight, there's going to be a premiere of the new video by Guns N' Roses. And apparently the record that was on wasn't selling well, because I guess this is maybe at a time when Nirvana happened by this time, and was that kind of music becoming a little bit...
Yeah, because it was on Use Your Illusion 2, I think.
Right. And I think maybe the... You know, the world was like, do you know what? We don't want this band anymore. There's Nirvana, there's Pearl Jam, there's Jane's Addiction. There's all this new crop of rock bands that...
Because it was the same sort of time as Terminator 2. And they, you know, You Could Be Mine and that. But it wasn't one of those from that film, so it wasn't as popular.
That's right. And it hadn't sold well, that record, apparently, at this point. And... the band weren't on board with it. The director said he was just like, this is ridiculous. It's like 7 minutes. Like, this is not going to work, however long it is. He went, this is just not going to work. And then it premiered. And I think the album sold three times what it already sold, literally in about, you know, a week. And much to everybody's surprise, Axl had actually got it right. You know, there was a massive audience to watch him just be the star of something for 7 minutes.
Dickheads like me.
But yeah, so you know, he got it right, and yeah, it was fascinating hearing, you know, even from like, you know, doing like loads of Nick Kershaw stuff in the early 80s, right the way through to, you know, building his career into making these, you know, all singing, all dancing. I mean, November Rain is the biggest over-the-top video I think there is. He's ridiculously, you know, pure 90s madness. And yeah, and it's definitely earned his place, you know, right up there. And it was bananas getting to kind of just pick his brains as to like, oh my God, what was that like being there, film, like, you know, directing that. And yeah, he's from what I, but I think he then went on to, he did do some other bits with Guns. I think he done loads of slashy stuff, and I think he done, did he do some of like, is he in the New Bohemians, whatever Izzy Stradlin done after that? I think he done some of that. And but yeah, but he was off then, and he done, I'll tell you what he done, he also done, is it Give In To Me, Michael Jackson and Slash, was Slash on that one? I think it was. And yeah, because I think like, was it, he was working with Michael Jackson, and he was like, I need a guitar player for this or something. And he got Slash in. But did Slash play on Dirty? No, he didn't play on Dirty Diana, did he?
I know Van Halen did one of them. I can't remember which one he did.
Eddie Van Halen done Beat It.
That's it, yeah.
I think
he was in Black and White, because, you know, I don't get anything else after other than Black and White.
Was it Lolita Ford? Did she play on? Lolita Ford, was it? Did she play on? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I know Van Halen did it for free.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get your solo on Beat It. I mean, that's pretty iconic. Yeah. I mean,
Stevie Ray Vaughan, didn't he play on a Michael Jackson song?
Probably.
Or I know, was that a David Bowie one?
I'm not sure. They all seem to reach out for them big kind of guitar giants, didn't they? But I think
your favourites, aren't they, Stu? Load of guitar solos. It's just what you love.
No, I do struggle with a guitar solo.
Maybe I'm thinking of Nile Rodgers.
Oh right, yeah. I mean, Christ, what
he played on China Girl, wasn't it?
He, well, blimey, yeah, he played on bloody everything.
He did.
I mean, we've just mentioned Michael Jackson, so, you know, just start to sort of wrap this up. I mean, it's impossible not to mention Thriller and you know, whatever you make of Michael Jackson as a pop star, you know, pretty special. And Thriller, you know, certainly as some, you know, as a 50-year-old man, when, you know, when that first come out, it was just like, this madness of like, have you seen Thriller? And then there was like another video of like the making of Thriller, and like, and you just sort of, you know, some of us had, you know, this was, I think by the time I'd seen it, maybe I'd seen a pirate of like American Wealth in London. Obviously, he'd reached out to Landis for that.
It was like a standalone film, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And and it's just fantastic. And it just shows, you know, that Michael Jackson was a bit of a visionary, wasn't he? And you know, an absolute, you know, pioneer, you know, certainly at that point. And even just the impact of the Billie Jean video, you know, just somebody dancing on them, lighting up them little, you know, steps. It was just incredible. And even if you look at the video like Black and White, which I think, you know, where all the faces merge, looks really good. But there was a video, I think it was Cry by
Godley and Cream,
which done that maybe that 6 or 7 years previously. And did Godley and Cream make that video? Because they were legendary video producers, wasn't they? So I don't know if they actually done Black or White. But fantastic. All right, well, look, we've been going for well over the hour now. And it's been lovely. It's been a much more intimate affair tonight. And it's been nice that we've all got to sort of like throw a few in the mix and have a chat, and you've had to endure me, you know, segueing into stories of former guests, but it pads it out a bit, which is always good. Thanks so much for coming along tonight. If you're listening to this and you've not been to one of these live shows before, there's a big old stack of you Patreons, and we only see a fraction of you, and we'd love you to come along and chat. As you've heard tonight, it's a really nice little space where you can all just have a little natter about music, and we're not judging, we're not trying to be super cool, even if I did say that I don't like Guns N' Roses, but It is a non-judgy thing. So come along and join in the chat and get as involved as you like. You can have your camera off or your mic off and just listen in, or you can come and have a natter like tonight's guests have done. So Kate, Syed, Steve, Danny, thanks so much for coming along tonight. And I'm going to press stop and don't go anywhere.